The Anniversary Quilt by Doshu. Poppy could feel sweat building around her temples as she continued to cast. She didn't even know how long it had been at this point. Her entire focus had condensed to her repeated series of spells and the readings she was getting back from her diagnostic charm. She was not paying attention to the stiffness in her arm from holding her wand aloft, the itch at the back of her neck from where the collar of her dressing gown wasn't sitting quite right, nor the dryness in her eyes from the late hour. She was not concerning herself with the rage that she felt for the tyrant who had caused this to happen, for the ministry who had encouraged this reprehensible act, for the headmaster who had submitted to this farce, who had allowed a school to become a battleground of politics. She was not thinking about her panic. Panic wouldn't help her here, and would be actively detrimental to Minerva's health. "Madame Pomfrey, do you want me to try again?" She shook her head, not turning toward the head boy, not breaking her concentration. St. Mungo's had received the call. Now it was only a matter of waiting. Poppy didn't know how much more time passed after that. It might have been an hour. It might have been far longer. She knew that it was still night, as the only light was that of the lantern next to the bed, the rest of the room bathed in near darkness due to the proximity of the new moon. She didn't care how long it had been. She would continue to cast until she expired, if only to ensure that her wife's heart didn't stop. Decades of experience prevented her from starting when the doors to the hospital wing banged open and several pairs of footsteps approached.
"Madame Pomfrey, these individuals claim that they are here to see you," announced a sickly sweet voice. "Mr. Davis, what are you doing out of bed?"
"Professor, I was here helping Madame Pomfrey with—"
"Telling lies,"
Dolores continued, cutting the boy off before tutting.
"Why would the matron need your assistance? She wouldn't, would she? Now why don't you tell me why you're really up and about so long after curfew?"
Poppy had half an ear open to the confrontation, but was waiting anxiously for the healer who stood opposite her to take over casting. Another, wearing the telltale lime-green robes, stepped up next to her and murmured,
"On three, switch. 1, 2, 3.
Her heart lurched as she ceased her mantra, and she held her breath until she'd confirmed that the readings remained steady, Minerva's heartbeat continuing at its forced rhythm. Poppy swayed a bit as she sucked in silent gulps of air, feeling her arm tingle faintly as she finally lowered it. Then she looked up at who had arrived, recognizing the witch next to her.
"Healer Rostami, thank you for coming," she greeted, wiping her brow. "I'll review the details with you in a moment, if you don't mind."
After receiving a small nod in response, she marched around the bed until she was in front of Dolores, bearing down on her as best as she could.
"You will get out of my hospital wing after what you've done tonight," she said, her voice shaking. From exhaustion or fury, she couldn't say.
"Why, Madame Pomfrey, that's no way to speak to your headmistress,"
the woman simpered.
"A terrible accident occurred this evening, of course, but it was Professor McGonagall's choice to attack a group of auras simply upholding the law."
Next to her, the head boy was staring between the two of them, looking entirely overwhelmed. For a brief moment, Poppy considered asking what overzealous punishment had already been issued before deciding that she had a much more important thing to do first. She flicked her wand and cast a silent sleeping charm, and watched in satisfaction as Dolores crumpled to the ground before levitating her onto a bed on the far side of the room. She very deliberately didn't glance back towards the healers to see their reactions.
"Davis," she said, turning toward the student, "what did Professor Umbridge say to you while I was occupied?"
"She took away 20 points and assigned me detention for the rest of the week."
"Well, that's easy enough to resolve then," Poppy replied promptly. "I'm awarding 50 points to Ravenclaw for your selflessness in assisting with Professor McGonagall's recovery tonight. And I don't care what she says about your detentions. You're already in detention with me, should you need it. Do you understand?"
The boy blinked a few times, then nodded.
"Yes, of course, Madame Pomfrey."
"Good. It's late, so you should be getting back now. And thank you, Davis," she added wearily,
feeling a wave of fatigue sweep through her. Once the student had left, Poppy turned back toward the healers.
She was hit in the chest with 4 stunners and thrown back 10 feet, her fall uncushioned. I've kept her heart rate steady, but I can't do that and treat her back. And ever since...
She shot a dark look at the woman lying in a bed across the room.
She's been here. I don't have half the supplies I need. Access to the flu network is restricted, and the headmaster isn't here to prepare a portkey that will function within the grounds, so we'll need to transport her through the gates.
She took a careful breath, then summoned Minerva's chart and handed it over.
Can you take her at St. Mungo's?
Certainly, Healer Rostami replied in a serious tone. You can entrust her to our care. It took half an hour to transport Minerva's unmoving form from the hospital wing, through the castle, across the grounds, and beyond the entrance gates. By the time Poppy had returned, more than a hint of pink was visible along the horizon, casting a faint, warm glow through the tall windows of her domain. After casting another sleeping charm over Dolores with a look of utter contempt, she strode purposely toward the hearth and threw a pinch of flue powder in, calling out,
"Severus Snape's quarters!"
as she stuck her head into the flames. As soon as the familiar glower came within view, she spoke, not giving the man a chance to complain about the early hour.
"I need a forgetfulness potion," she stated firmly. "And don't you give me that look. You heard what that woman did last night. If I thought the rest of you would let me, I'd keep her sedated until July. She's a monster!"
Severus gazed at her steadily. After a minute had passed, he nodded curtly and turned away from his fireplace.
"Give me half an hour. I'll deliver it myself."
Poppy smooths her hands over the squares of the fabric. Her fingers tremble with remembered fear, even as she knows that Minerva is asleep in the next room at this very moment. The worst of that danger is behind them. The healers have done their work. There will be more danger ahead, though, and she knows that her wife won't be able to keep out of the thick of it. She selects the black cloth from the bundle, laying the rest in the basket and withdrawing a needle and a spool of thread. But before setting to work, as she awaits dawn's first light, she finds her gaze drifting to the squares of memories folded on the sofa next to her. A large black H on the first square she ever made, for the importance that Hogwarts has to each of them, despite the fact that their years there as students hadn't overlapped. Another one a few years later, and then a third a few years after that. One for each of their first years employed at the castle. In recent years, there have been many squares with a border of black, that H a repeated motif. So many years when Hogwarts, the pressures upon it, the dangers within it, had been at the forefront of their minds. Poppy tears her gaze away and instead focuses on the task at hand. Another year to remember Hogwarts, another year to turn the fresh black cloth into that familiar H motif. She knew it the instant they returned to their little stone cottage on the Isle of Bressay, nestled in between the Loch of Grimsetter and the coastal cliffs. She knew it even before Albus sent them away so that Minerva could get some much-needed rest. She knew it the moment Dolores had arrived at Hogwarts 10 months ago. Taking a steadying breath, she threads the strand of silk through the eye of her needle, takes a few more breaths until her hand is no longer shaking, then sets to work. The following days were an exercise in endurance. Poppy didn't know what had possessed a group of students to confront Umbridge directly, nor to travel to the Ministry on the backs of Thestrals and break into the Department of Mysteries, of all places. She truly didn't understand. When she'd been in school, the greatest adventure she'd embarked on had involved sneaking out to attend a Harpies match. Even so, it wasn't up to her to discipline the students, nor even to comprehend whatever reasoning they might have had to undertake such a wild escapade. She simply needed to do her part in keeping them alive and healthy another day, even when they seemed determined to take that good health and taunt fate with it. Dolores was also back, but she could at least be left to her own devices. And Poppy was happy to give up one of her beds if it meant keeping the vile woman away from the rest of the school populace. It wasn't until the next night that she had no new patients in the hospital wing, and even then she slept fitfully, her body beyond exhausted and her mind uncaring that she'd only managed a total of 5 hours of slumber over the previous 3 days. Her thoughts spun restlessly, filling her with worry for her wife. Had the healers succeeded in steadying Minerva's heart? Had they reversed the severe spinal injury? Or had something gone wrong, but they'd been unable to reach Poppy because of the restrictions on the castle's flu connection? It wasn't until Sunday afternoon, when she was completing an end-of-term inventory of her cupboards, that she heard a familiar voice call out from the entrance to the hospital wing.
"Madam Pomfrey, might I borrow you for a few minutes?"
Poppy dropped her parchment and quill on a shelf and spun around, bustling over to the doorway without hesitation. Minerva was standing there in her usual teaching robes, supporting most of her weight on a walking stick.
"Of course, my office is free," she said briskly,
casting a subtle spell to help ease her wife's gait before leading the way to the small adjoining room. Once they were both inside and the door was shut, Poppy cast a flurry of diagnostic spells to make sure she wasn't about to cause Minerva pain before throwing her arms around her and pressing a kiss to her jaw, then burying her face in her shoulder.
"I've been so worried, dear,"
she whispered, feeling heat brewing behind her eyes. It wouldn't be long before the tears came.
"They took excellent care of me, just as you knew they would," came the response,
the familiar clipped tones filling Poppy with reassurance that her wife was feeling like herself. Thin fingers were stroking her hair, while a chin rested above her ear.
"What did they say?"
she asked, a faint warble audible in her voice.
"I am to take things slowly and not push myself too hard."
Poppy chuckled at both the wry tone and the scant likelihood of that happening.
"And I've been strongly advised to spend most of my recovery as a witch and not as a cat. So no long afternoons lounging in sunspots."
Above her, Minerva sighed wistfully.
"I will be there to make sure you don't push yourself too hard. Don't you worry."
Her wife pulled away slightly so that she could meet her gaze.
"I never worry with you there, Poppy."
The tears arrived then, but they were accompanied by a tremulous smile. The black border takes some 2 weeks to complete. Poppy only works on it in the early hours, since she's a light sleeper due to many years spent presiding over a hospital wing where nighttime checks on her patients are a necessity, and Minerva usually doesn't stir until dawn during the summer months. This summer, Poppy's even managed to make her have a lie-in a few times, and though Minerva will never admit it, the additional rest has helped ease her back pain. She takes a few days before proceeding with the next part. She doesn't truly want to add it to this year's square, even though she knows it's fitting. It's right. But it's the implication that she doesn't want, because the phoenix means that war isn't coming. It means that the war is here. So instead, she ventures into the dewy fields that surround their cottage, allowing the wood sorrel and wild mint to caress her bare feet, collecting bunches of the greenery with the sickle that they hang by the front door for this very purpose. The yellow buds of the wood sorrel dot the countryside, and across the wilderness there's a splash of color from the wild honeysuckle that she'll walk to one morning for the petals that will be added to this summer's tea blend. But there's plenty of time for that yet. When her diagnostic spell work confirms that Minerva is well enough for multiple bouts of apparition, they descend the cliffs, seeking out limpets and winkles, collecting dulse, allowing the sea spray to mist over them in the low tide. It's easy to forget about the war here, if she allows herself to. After that brief reprieve, Poppy rises one morning and knows that it's time to return to the square of fabric. She feels it. It's something that needs to be done. So she sits in her usual spot at the end of the sofa and pulls out the bundle of cloth, removing a length of vivid scarlet and another in shimmering gold. The rest is returned to the basket. She knows that she can do this much faster with magic. There are times that Minerva offers to transfigure it all for her, but her wife suggests this with a small quirk in the corner of her mouth, because she understands why Poppy does this. Just as her wife has the need to be bold and yell at Albus at least once a week, Poppy needs to use her hands. She needs to use her hands for something that doesn't involve any pain, that doesn't feel suffering. Poppy spends the few hours of darkness that morning folding the twin sections of fabric together, forming the beginnings of a wing. Then, the next morning, she continues her folds, and then the next as well, until it does start to resemble a phoenix made of a series of overlapping angles. It's a burst of fiery color. It should fill her with hope, but even as she prepares her needle to stitch it together, she feels nothing but dread. Her hospital wing will be busy in the coming year. The remaining days of term flew by, and once both Umbridge and the Hogwarts Express were gone, the staff all breathed a collective sigh of relief. One by one, the teaching staff departed the castle as they completed their post-term duties, until July 1st arrived, and it was only the headmaster and deputy headmistress who still had responsibilities to see to. After double-checking that she'd packed everything she would need for the summer months, Poppy made her way up to the Great Hall for breakfast, and found Albus and Minerva already there, in the midst of an argument, if her wife's pinched frown was any indication.
"The boy just lost his godfather, and you sent him back to those people?" Minerva demanded.
"They are his family. There's no better place for him, especially not now that he's grieving,"
Albus replied in his usual calm demeanor.
"No, you cannot truly believe that."
"Minerva, he will be safe there, I assure you."
"You've ignored Potter this whole year, and now you've sent him to the place he hates most, while his grief is still fresh. Albus, you know what it's like to lose a loved one. You know what it's like to feel responsible for that loss."
Poppy reached over and laid a hand on her wife's arm, giving it a comforting squeeze. She knew that the two of them had a kinship that dated back to before she'd even met Minerva, and that whatever events they were referencing were not for her to understand. But she still heard the pain in the woman's stern voice and recognized that same pain in the man's blue eyes. There was a palpable silence. Then Albus sighed.
"Very well. He must remain there for 2 weeks, but then I will fetch him myself."
Minerva's jaw tensed as though she had something to add. After a moment, she replied tersely,
"Thank you."
They returned to their meal then, Minerva casting a spell to reheat what was left of her rashers and eggs, while Albus sipped his tea, humming quietly. When a few minutes had passed, he turned toward them both.
"While we're discussing our summer plans," Albus began mildly, "I did want to ensure that you take the time you need to rest this summer. I'll handle the visits to this year's group of new Muggleborn students and the other tasks that remain about the castle. Why, you might as well depart today and make the most of the season."
Minerva's eyebrows skittered upward, while Poppy smothered her smile behind her buttered toast triangle.
"Really, Albus?"
"Yes, really,"
he confirmed, before taking another sip of his tea.
"You don't think I've forgotten how to perform a deputy's duties after these last few years, do you?"
"You can't be serious. You've only just returned, and I'm certain you have months' worth of your own responsibilities to catch up on. You can't just..."
"What she means to say," Poppy said calmly, cutting her off, "is yes, we'll be departing this afternoon."
Albus's eyes twinkled at them both, and next to her, Minerva exhaled harshly.
"Very well, but I will be taking care of the book lists."
The headmaster simply hummed into his tea. The phoenix doesn't take long to come together, now that she has folded it into shape. When she darns the last end, Poppy sets it on the sofa next to her and looks at it with a critical eye. It's quite geometric, and doesn't possess the grace of fox, but even so, she's pleased with it. It's not as though there's grace in the war that is upon them, anyhow. With the phoenix complete, she takes another break from the project, this time venturing out towards the lock to see how the swans are doing this summer. A few early mornings are spent fishing for trout, and others collecting berries from the brambly shrubs farther inland. She glances at the final scrap of fabric in the basket a few times, and it feels too soon to take it out and add it to the others. So instead, she spends a day replenishing their supply of jam, a warmth filling her when Minerva joins her in the kitchen to stir the bubbling berries and sway to the music on the wireless.
"At least give it a day before you go apparating about the country,"
Poppy said as she summoned the summer wireless guide. It crinkled slightly as it slapped into her hand, its pages faintly wrinkled from the few days of drizzle it must have endured on the porch since it was dropped off in late June.
"Apparating about the country?"
Poppy didn't even bother to look up, instead flipping through the pages to see what new programs were planned for the season.
"Yes, you and I both know that you're going to check on that boy, regardless of what Albus has to say on the matter." "And if I do?"
She sighed, setting down the booklet and meeting Minerva's pale gaze.
"Rest first, please. Apparating multiple times is strenuous on your spine, which you know, dear."
Minerva looked at her steadily, almost mulishly, for several seconds, until she cracked a tiny smile that was no more than a twitch at the corner of her mouth.
"I suppose I should rest, if only to keep you from harping." "Harping?"
Poppy smiled, then smacked her wife lightly with the wireless guide.
"Choose something for us to listen to this summer before I harp some more, then."
That first day back eased gently into the next, neither of them voicing how much their usual rhythm during the summer had been affected by Minerva's injury. Still, bread was baked that second morning back after Poppy had made a quick trip to the shops for supplies to get a starter going, and when they had their first summer breakfast of fresh toast with the previous year's sloe and raspberry jam, it finally felt like they were home. Once breakfast was reduced to crumbs and dishes were clean and sent back to their cupboards, Poppy sighed contentedly and relaxed slightly in her chair, lifting her feet to rest them in Minerva's lap across the table.
"Do you want me to join you today?"
she asked, refilling their cups with a flick of her wand before replacing the tea cozy. Steam rose in tendrils, the scent of last summer's blend mild. Given the stories that had been filling the news ever since that whole debacle at the ministry, Poppy reflected that they might need to put together something a little more robust this year. Minerva frowned.
"No, I think I should be discreet. I'm sure Albus has people watching the house, but he who must not be named may as well. I'll go in my animagus form." "You are registered,"
Poppy pointed out.
"True. I'll stick to the gardens." "And run through a few hedges so that you can pass as a stray?"
Minerva sniffed and didn't answer. Poppy smiled into her teacup.
"I might venture down to the coast today," she continued, "while the tide is out."
"Starting on this year's dulse collection?"
"Might as well. I'll see what we have for mollusks this season as well."
A barn owl flew in through the open window then, with that day's copy of The Prophet, and the kitchen soon fell silent, but for the occasional turning of a page and the background hum of bees. Before Minerva ventured out an hour later, Poppy cast a few of her usual diagnostic spells, just to be certain she wasn't about to embark on a completely foolish endeavor, then wished her well with a stern look and a warm embrace. It was many hours later that her wife returned, sitting heavily in a chair and hooking her walking stick over the back of it.
"Well?"
"That horrible family appears to be leaving him to his own devices," Minerva replied, drawing her wand and helping Poppy to clean the day's collected goods. "While I don't believe that's the best way to help someone through grief, it's a far sight better than what I'd expect of them."
Poppy frowned as she tied off several bundles of mint with twine and sent them up to hang from the rafters to dry.
"Was there anyone watching the house?"
"I imagine so. I didn't see anyone, and there was no reaction to my being there."
They worked in silence for a few minutes, sharing the work of casting preservation charms over the limpets and the wood sorrel, before conjuring up containers to store everything in. Once the table was clear and everything tidy, Poppy asked,
"And how are you?"
Minerva gave her a steady look.
"I won't be coddled."
She huffed and crossed her arms.
"However, I will probably be sitting for much of the rest of the day."
Poppy sighed, then helped her wife over to the sofa, which she sank into with a faint groan. Once she was settled, her tartan cushion at her back, Poppy cast a few spells to loosen her knotted muscles and warm her ligaments before applying a heating charm to the cushion. Then she crouched in front of Minerva, placing a hand on each of her knees.
"You don't need to push yourself so hard," she said quietly. "You're strong without that."
"I need to do something, though," Minerva replied, her lips pinched in frustration. "Albus always makes me feel so useless, whether he's sending me away or deliberately keeping me in the dark."
"You will do something. You will do plenty."
Poppy squeezed her wife's knees gently before standing, then leaned in for a soft kiss before stepping away.
"We both know that this next year will be challenging now that the news of you-know-who's return is in the open. Take care of yourself now, so that you can take care of the children later."
Minerva didn't respond, beyond a resigned sigh and a nod, and Poppy's heart clenched at the knowledge that sitting idly, deliberately not acting, was so difficult, yet necessary. It's August when Poppy finally returns to that basket and pulls out the various pieces that will be used to construct this year's square. The fabric that will be used as the base is hideous, and yet she feels a grim smile forming as she thinks of everything it means. It's another thing they survived, another evil that has passed through the doors of Hogwarts and made them stronger. Then that smile turns to a frown as Poppy thinks of just how many evils there have been within the castle in recent years. The following mornings are spent carefully adding the black border to the square, ensuring that each H lies flat and even. Once that's finalized, she turns to the phoenix and feels a small smile forming when she thinks of how scandalized Minerva will be. It's not as though she doesn't know exactly what this square will look like, but it's simply atrocious. The colors clash horribly. It's obscene. But it means so much, which means it's perfect. Once the final dregs of tea have been drunk and the table was cleared, Minerva flicked her wand and summoned a familiar wooden case from the rafters, where it was tucked away year after year. Once it had settled between them, and Poppy had vanished the film of dust on its surface, anticipation began to hum under her skin. Of the many traditions they'd built over the years, this would always be her favorite. She reached forward with a finger and slid open the latch, then lifted the lid.
"Eager?" Minerva asked, archly, her expression betraying none of her own excitement that Poppy knew she felt.
Poppy huffed and rolled her eyes, even as her socked feet found her wife's under the table and tangled with them. Then she tapped the case with her wand and sent the assortment of spools of thread to arrange themselves by hue on the table. Then she looked up and met Minerva's gaze steadily.
"We're putting her on it."
"Absolutely not."
Poppy crossed her arms.
"And you're saying that woman wasn't a significant part of the year that we've just been through? That we've both survived? That we helped the students survive?"
A pained look flashed across Minerva's face at that moment, and Poppy reached across to take her hand.
"I'm sorry, dear. I know Sirius Black was your student once, too."
"It's not only that,"
came the reply, as Minerva's brows creased into a frown.
"The students shouldn't have been made to suffer a menace like that at all. And Potter, I don't even know what to do with him. A child shouldn't feel the need to go charging off at the first sign of danger."
Poppy tutted.
"Well, it isn't as if it's anything new. That boy has been landing himself in my hospital wing for years now. He's a magnet for trouble."
When Minerva didn't say anything, she squeezed her cold fingers gently, then cast a silent spell to warm them.
"There was nothing more you could have done, Minerva,"
she said gently, when her wife remained silent, her face becoming progressively more pinched due to her clearly distressing thoughts.
"Not trapped as you were by Albus's instructions. If you had allowed yourself to go against her directly, you'd have been dismissed, and the students needed you."
Minerva pursed her lips.
"You went against her? Multiple times, too, if Severus wasn't simply exaggerating."
Poppy allowed a grim smile of satisfaction to shine through.
"Only when she went too far while in my corner of the first floor. The only place I could trust that I wouldn't be caught."
"And what does that say about your healer's oath?"
Poppy gave the hand in hers one final squeeze before releasing it.
"Nothing at all.
She wasn't a patient of mine, at least not until her jaunt through the Forbidden Forest.
She then plucked a spool of black thread from its row and set it at the center of the table.
Now, what motifs are we going to use this year?
They decided on the black border of interlocking H's, without even needing to discuss it. So much of their year had been wrapped up in the events of Hogwarts, and the struggles that had taken place there, that they would be remiss to not honor the castle's strength in this way. It wasn't the first such reference in recent years, nor would it likely be the last. The next motif that they agreed upon was the Phoenix. Though Poppy wasn't technically a member of the Order of the Phoenix, nor was Minerva officially, the organization was still an important part of their fight and was the closest representation to what they each stood for after Hogwarts. A spool of scarlet and a spool of gold were placed next to the black one. And then they were back to the debate that had begun this year's planning session.
"But you like cats," Poppy teased. "She might have ruined them for me."
Poppy scoffed, reaching toward the warm hues. She hummed slightly as she visualized that hideous cardigan, then selected a spool of pale pink and another in white to go along with it.
"A pattern of cats on a cream fabric," she declared, adding the final two spools to the others that had been chosen.
"You want to defile our quilt?"
Poppy sighed.
"I want us to not push her deeds and their consequences from our minds. We need to remember what happened. We need to remember that Hogwarts prevailed, that she didn't succeed."
"We must remember the victories," Minerva finished for her.
After a short pause, she made a sound of frustration in her throat.
"Why did it have to be cats, though?"
Poppy shook her head as her wife began her casting, the motion slow and deliberate at first, but then gaining speed as she fell into the rhythm of every time they did this together. The threads unwound from their bobbins, infinite in length as Minerva wove them, row by row, and Poppy allowed her thoughts to drift as she watched the narrow strip of fabric slowly widen. She still remembered how the quilt had started, like it was yesterday. It had been their first anniversary, a whirlwind of a week spent traveling, attending the 1966 Quidditch World Cup final at the end of it. Once they'd arrived home, they'd opened up the box of trinkets and memories from their wedding a year earlier, and Minerva had pulled out the three crossed and knotted lengths of cord they'd used for their handfasting.
"Feeling sentimental?" Poppy had teased.
Minerva had continued to run a hand along the cord for a few minutes before replying,
"Feeling proud? This should not have been kept away in a box. I keep so much of myself locked away 10 months of the year. We both do. We shouldn't do the same while we're here. Not in our home."
Poppy recalled how her heart had swelled, as it did every time she looked upon their memories that were lovingly crafted onto the quilt. Each year another square. Rows upon rows of experiences, troubles and successes, and at its center that cord, their bond that held everything together. In front of her now, her wife was just finishing up the last fat quarter, the dreaded cat pattern, so Poppy began replacing the various spools within the case. Once Minerva's casting was complete, she banished it all to the basket next to the sofa.
"Thank you, dear," she said,
a smile tugging at her lips. Minerva gave an exasperated sigh before returning the smile.
"At least you like cats."
Minerva emerges from the bedroom shortly after Poppy puts the kettle on. It's mid-August now, 5 days before they'll return to Hogwarts to take care of their preparation for the start of term. It's the 12th, and as she has done every other year, Poppy has completed the quilt in time for this day, for their anniversary. The quilt is draped across the kitchen table. It won't remain there for long. It will move to the sofa for them to curl up under during the remaining days of their break. Then it will travel with them to the castle. It will see plenty of use in their quarters during the winter months, and even more when they need to revisit their memories for strength.
"Good morning, dear,"
Poppy says after she finishes setting out cups for their tea. Minerva isn't even looking at the quilt. She simply walks around the table and reaches for her, wrapping her long arms around Poppy's shoulders and holding her tightly.
We made it one more year. The words are whispered against the top of her ear.
Poppy pulls back and affects a stern look.
Not for lack of trying, she replies.
Minerva openly rolls her eyes and turns to face the table. There's silence for a minute or two as she takes in all of the squares, their 30 previous years together, before she flips over the fold and looks at the newest one, the first of its row. And she makes a sound of disgust in her throat, even as her lips thin to a tense line. Poppy steps behind her and wraps her arms around her waist.
I know the cats are an affront, she says quietly, but I think it works. What do you think?
Minerva's hands rest over hers. Then she turns to face Poppy.
It does, she agrees. It's hideous, but it's important. And we need to find some more pleasant memories next year, because we deserve a nicer quilt.
The kettle whistles, but Poppy ignores it for a moment, to lean in and press a kiss to her wife's lips. A kiss of good morning and happy anniversary. A kiss of be strong and I'm with you and we'll make it. A kiss of I love you.